you bought a train station.
Yes.
You bought a train station and made it into a place for culture and for art. How in the hell did you get the idea to buy a train station and do that?
The nice thing, you told our listeners before that we are crazy, which is great. I love crazy people. I know that I'm crazy too. And I've always dreamed about my own theater. For me, this train station is my theater. Of course, it is no theater, but I made it in a way a kind of playground for a boy, for Matthias, who does not want to be an adult.
Yeah.
Who only wants to stay a child and playing on a playground with the clarinet, playing, not working, playing, playing. Yeah. I have the feeling at this moment when you ask me a question, you give me the feeling I'm now the most important person in your life for this moment.
Yes.
When you are asking me this question. And if we manage to communicate like this, whenever possible,
yeah,
we can make the world better. If you do something with love, it needs time and it needs energy. That's how it is.
Yeah, I mean, you're the one to talk about.
I'm not the one. I'm one of. I'm one.
Yeah, but you inspired me so much with all the things you do and with the passion and the energy.
We inspire each other, I think. It's a symbiotic thing, something like this.
That's why I do also this. You know, I listened to now some podcasts with you and once you talked about your parents being amateur musicians,
yes,
but in the best possible way, maybe you can
say
what you mean.
Yes, I like this picture very much. I did not really know about, I did not care about the word amateur in the past. And I think a few months or let's say 2 years ago, I recognized where the roots of the word amateur. And I recognized that it's Italian or Latin based amare. And amare is to love. And I like this idea of that being an amateur is someone who is loving what he/she is doing.
Yes.
Just often we think about amateurs that they are not that good than professionals.
Yes.
But I think it's a different kind of point of view if you think about doing what you are loving. I like this picture because sometimes if you get professional, you forget to love what you are doing.
Yes, 100%.
It helps me to remember. And that's why I'm also very happy if I have in some opportunities to work also with amateurs.
Yes, me too. Actually, I did that last week. I played Nino Rota concerto with an amateur orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fantastic. I loved it. It was so much fun because they are not there because they have to be to get their money.
The word Dienst in German.
Yeah.
It's a terrible word. And sometimes the baddest Dienste are the Dienste where it feels like a Dienst.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
And this is, let's say, the opposite of being an amateur, being some man, woman who is loving what he/she is doing. And this, it's just a kind of remembering about the roots, my roots, and my parents were amateurs. They made music because they loved doing it in their free time. And
sometimes we can learn so much
absolutely
from that, because it's so easy to forget
absolutely
that we actually should love what we do. Because with all the perfection, all the pressure, all the career auditions, whatever, it's so easy to lose sight of that. Well, we'll probably already take some of that, but now to set the official start, maybe you can, for those that are watching that might not know who you are, quickly introduce yourself.
My name is Matthias Schorn. I'm a musician. I was born in the countryside of Salzburg, let's say 20 kilometers in the south of the city center of Salzburg. And I started to play the clarinet because my father played the clarinet, not as a professional. He was an amateur in best way of thinking about being an amateur. And I as a child, I wanted to be like my father. He played in a, how can I say in English, in a marching band, something like this, which
Blasmusikkapelle, right?
Blasmusikkapelle, yeah. which is very common in Austria.
Every little village has that kind.
There are more Blasmusikkapellen than villages in Austria, in fact. which is very special, really.
Wow.
This is a fact.
It's a huge tradition, right?
Absolutely.
Do you know where it came from? Is this?
I can tell you what I think that I know. Big impact on this scene was, of course, the Count Car military chapels.
Mm.
They were very, very famous and popular. They were also responsible for bringing opera melodies, potpourris of opera, of operettas, of so-called classical music to the people who, also on the countryside, and also not the richest people, to bring this music also to the poorer people.
To everyone.
To everybody. Yeah. To everyone. And I think these roots of this big scene and tradition of Blasmusik in Austria is also in connection with this military bands we had and we have in Austria. I like the idea of being, even if this is a village with, let's say, 500 people living there, but to have a kind of cultural or musical possibility to have nice ceremonies in the church,
yeah.
To have nice ceremonies on the square in the village where you can celebrate special days.
It makes a sense of community.
It makes a sense of community, and it makes a sense of there is something special. If the
identity also kind
yes,
of. Yes,
yes, yes. You have to be careful with this word. It's a.
Yeah.
I think it's a. It's interesting to think about. But I'm not sure. I have to think about too. What is identity? What is mine? What is our identity? But of course it has a big impact. And till now, till today, I have stepped in this big universe of professional music more than 20 years ago. But till today, I have a, let's say, good connection to the scene and to this Blasmusik community. And I appreciate very much what they are doing. And I think that they are doing a good job for the community.
You know, one thing I think they're doing and they're responsible for is this insane amount of high quality playing. So many, I mean, I always think many people have some kind of talent. Many people could be great musicians, but a lot of them maybe never get the idea to start an instrument. So they never become what they maybe could have become. And the fact that there are so many opportunities, so many little brass bands in all the villages, that makes so many people learn instruments, which then has the result that so many great instrumentalists come from Austria. Like if I look, clarinetists is a great example.
Absolutely.
The Austrian clarinetists are not only very present in the Austrian orchestras, but
absolutely.
If you look at the top German orchestras, Berlin Philharmonic, Deutsche Sinfonieorchester, yeah, I mean, you were there,
absolutely.
But now also it's another Austrian guy there. So
two,
actually. Yes. Oh, wow. I think it comes from that. Also in the other instruments that are being played, the brass instrument mainly that are being played in those bands. And that is fantastic.
Absolutely. And if you look just, let's say, to the Austrian orchestras, you see that, let's say, over 90% of the wind players were part of a Blasmusikkapelle in their as a part of their education.
Yeah, that's also how you learned your instrument, right?
Like absolutely, and I think you
thing.
Are not learning only the instrument; you are learning to speak a certain dialect,
mm.
which is interesting. Yeah. Because I love dialects.
Yeah.
I love to
Sorry,
hear...
we do this in English now.
Yeah, but I love to hear where someone comes from.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's also a little bit with music. If I have to play Tchaikovsky, Debussy, I don't know, I try to find the dialect. I will not speak French fluently.
Yeah.
I will not be able to, but I try to listen. I try to learn. I try to ask. I try to hear what conductors are and so on. And I try to find the dialect of this music. And I think as every country, as every human being, also we have a certain dialect. And if I hear Rosenkavalier Suite by Richard Strauss, I love, not every time, but very often, how, for example, my orchestra plays this music. But because I think there is a kind of language, a kind of dialect, which I recognize.
Yes.
And I'm so happy if there is something unique. And yeah, that's what I really appreciate.
That's also for me the biggest thing. If I can hear somebody or a group or an orchestra, whatever it is, and I see, okay, that's they or he or she has something unique, something authentic.
Yes. And it's not about good or bad.
Yeah.
It's just about unique, authentic, like you say, something special, something you recognize suddenly.
Yeah.
This is very difficult. To create something like this, I think also as a solo player or a chamber musician or a band orchestra, it's very, very, very hard to create this brand marks, let's say.
And to keep or to find it, I think. And also then to, I feel like in a sensible, useful way, develop it further, because it can never be like, okay, this is it now, and it has to 100% be like that forever. I feel like when I play, I record a piece, and maybe sometimes, very rarely, I think, okay, now this was actually good recording.
Yes, and then you listen 5 years later to
it. And I'm like, although sometimes I like it, but I think now I'm a different person. I would do it completely differently.
Absolutely, but isn't this wonderful?
Yes,
absolutely. I'm so happy that this is our work. Our life as a musician, that we don't stop to research.
Some people stop, but that's when that's the beginning of the end, I always think.
Yes.
And I think not just in music, but in life, I have the feeling like, okay, this is, we told you before, you know, normally I try to have a certain, you know, structure for this, but this is a very interesting topic because I feel there we have a similar way of thinking about not just music, but what we do. Besides music, it's always developing, always trying new things.
Always learning,
because I think otherwise, why bother?
Never,
you know?
Never saying, I know the truth.
Oh yeah.
If someone tells me he knows the truth, I'm out.
You know, they're full of, I know we don't swear, I think, I'm not sure, but there, yeah. I absolutely, when somebody's found the one way.
Yeah.
Like, it has to be like that. Yes. You have to play Schubert Sonata like that.
Yes. I don't believe in this. Because in general, I don't know if there is one truth.
I think there
are lots of points where you can look to one thing. And it always looks different. If you look to the microphone from here, it's just... The point of view is interesting, but
and it always changes.
Yes,
and I think it's so. That's also so interesting with music. You talked about regions. A certain region has a certain dialect. Maybe, you know, we have French music, and then we have, you know, Viennese music. Then we have Czech music. But I feel often also not just the region, but the time is so insanely important. When I listen to, I don't know, some Schubert. And it tells me about the Biedermeier time. And then even though it's Vienna, then I listen to something from Mahler, which was still composed in Vienna, then it's a completely different world. It says, it has in the core, we can kind of kind of recognize, okay, this is from this area, but the times make it so different. And I often wonder what people will think about the music composed today.
Yes, of course.
And which of that music will actually be relevant?
But that would be the question. If we would know all the music composed at Schubert's time, probably there would be lots of music we today would say.
Hmm? Yeah.
But what stayed is Schubert.
Yeah.
And some others. But I think it will be probably like this with the music which is composed today, that it will stay something.
Something will stay. Often I wonder what will stay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Nobody knew back in the time. Now we can analyze Mozart and be like, yeah, of course. Of course, it's much better than
Wannheim. It's very easy. You know? 300 years after that. Yeah.
But back then, they didn't know. And I'm often so curious, like, what of the contemporary music, not just meaning the contemporary, classical contemporary music, but absolutely. Also all the other kind of styles, like pop rock, crossover, absolutely. Whatever it is. Like, what will it say about the time? Even in movies, like I watch series
even
from the 60s.
Even in architecture, I thought once I'm quite a lot driving the car because I live on the countryside, and there are lots of these circles where you drive.
Yeah.
And I recognized a few days ago, my God, every circle in each village is the same with the same supermarket, the same. It always looks, it's so, you can change it like, and I was thinking, oh, in 500 years, when they see what we did, there were all of the little markets in the village centers were closed. It's dead. Nothing is there. But you go to the circle out, and there is the same supermarket in every village in Austria. Let's say I'm exaggerating a little bit, but I was wondering, what will they think about us? they will say we are really stupid and crazy.
But we are.
Absolutely, I agree.
Awesome. So for you, the first thing in music, basically, which got you started was I Google translated it, Blasmusikkapelle. Google says it's brass band,
okay.
Although it's not just brass, but let's call it brass band for now. That was how you got started originally, like inspired by your parents.
My first memories. Yeah. My father on Sunday took this nice clothes, Alpine clothes, and went to the church to play and then to the village square to play and celebrate some special days. And I was listening with my mom. At this time, my mom didn't play at the brass band because she got us. I had two sisters and me, and she did make a kind of sabbatical. And we were listening, and also my grandfather was playing the organ in the village and was the leader of the choir. It was also everything very small. The choir had, let's say, 20 members, and they didn't play Schubert, Mozart, and some big masses.
Yeah,
they played traditionals, but it was important. They were important people in the village, and they rehearsed in our house because we lived in one house. My grandparents, my parents, and us.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember these rehearsals when these 20 people came and rehearsed these choir pieces. Of course, my grandpa didn't have an organ at home, but he had a little harmonium where he tried to imitate the organ. And
nice.
they rehearsed at our house once a week. And so the brass band with my Papa and this organ choir thing with my grandpapa were the things in my memory which brought me in touch in a way. It was much more exciting to visit the church being with my grandfather at the organ compared to sitting with all the others downstairs and praying.
Absolutely.
I was so curious about what did yeah, it was the church felt like 20 minutes when I was up with him.
Nice. So when did you start then? Was clarinet the first instrument?
Yes. Yep. The how do you call a recorder? I started recorder. With a recorder in the kindergarten.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
But let's say the first serious instrument I chose was
now you will get a shitstorm from the recorder community. I know. Once I posted a picture of me wearing a shirt, because you know they always say to the bassist, oh, shouldn't you have learned the recorder? And I posted a photo with a shirt together with Georg Breinschmidt. Mm-hmm. Sorry for the Americans, George Breinschmidt. So they know it. And it said like, no, I wouldn't have learned the recorder rather than the bass. And then I got a comment online saying from somebody that, oh, how you should have more respect for recorder players. Some people at university so and so were very offended.
Sorry to all recorder players. My recorder playing was not very serious. So.
And then, how old were you when you started with the clarinet?
Eight.
Yeah. Nice. And you started playing immediately in the local brass band, or
no? I the conductor of the brass band came to our house once a week.
Nice.
And made some lessons with me. But what is really nice is that my first memory playing the clarinet. Of course, my daddy allowed me to try with him with his clarinet, yeah, like a child always. Papa, man. And yeah, of course he allowed me sometimes to try. But my first clarinet in the age of 8 was under the Christmas tree.
Ooh.
And I was so happy. I packed this present and there was a clarinet, and I remember, I think it's true, my parents also said yes, it was like this, and I think there's a picture too. Under this Christmas tree, my papa and me played Leise Rieselt der Schnee. He showed me just a few notes. We didn't play the whole song, but a few notes of the melody, and it worked quite okay.
Wow.
And this was so, for me, yeah, I felt like an adult. I am now no child anymore. So
awesome. Yeah. And then so you then had a few lessons, and yes. Then at which point did you start also playing in the
The funny thing is that first they didn't allow to play with the clarinet. They asked me if I could, and this is also kind of tradition, if I could carry the drum.
Ah.
So when the brass band is doing these marches, always a young boy is choosing one boy of the village. It was quite a job with kind of, I was honored to be the one. So I was allowed to carry the drum
Somebody else would hit the drum and you would be the one carrying it.
Yes. That was my first job at the brass band.
Nice.
And after doing this for 1 year, they allowed me to join the rehearsals.
Nice.
And then
you worked your way in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I never forget, really never forget my first rehearsal with Trachtenmusikkapelle Bad Vigaun. Never. This is this marching band from my home village, because I went with my papa with my clarinet case there, and I was so nervous and in a positive way.
Yeah.
I was so thrilled, and I really can't tell you the first piece I've ever played. It had the name Friedenschoral,
mm-hmm,
because they rehearsed it because there was a kind of celebration on next Sunday in the church, and they need to rehearse this choral. And I will never forget. And I saw the music on the music stand, and my daddy sat next to me, and I said, Papa, I don't know this piece, I cannot play. And he said, oh, you can. it's so nice also in my review my papa always gave me the feeling, not only about music, also my mama. That's why I'm so thankful to my mama and to my papa, because I feel they always gave me the feeling as a child, you will do it.
Nice.
We support you and you will do it.
Oh, fantastic.
I've not done anything for it, you know. I could have been born in Afghanistan or in Africa with parents dying on HIV very soon.
Yeah.
What a present is it to be I was born here in Middle Europe in complete in the country of peace and with parents who were very nice and loving me and supporting me. And wow, yeah, this is really a present. I have nothing done for it.
It's sometimes so easy to forget these things off and think, you know, there's so many struggles in life. This is not getting done, that is not, taxes, bureaucracy, and I'm getting so fed up, but then I forget. It's just a luxury to have, it's such a luxury to have this.
Bist du deppert?
Yeah. Wirklich? That bist du deppert, we have to translate on YouTube.
When I'm thinking about this, I'm going with him there to this first rehearsal, and I just say, Papa, I don't know the piece, I cannot.
Yeah.
And he just says, well, you will do it.
And then, did you do it? Did it work out?
For me, it's really, I get goosebumps because I think if I would have a son, I would like to treat him like this.
Yeah.
You will do it. You will do it.
And
just try.
How did it go?
I did it.
Oh, you did it? Yes. And then you continued playing. They accepted you. They saw, okay.
Yes, and then I did some rehearsals. And the first concert was a funeral.
No.
Yeah. Because it was part of the game to be also with the brass band in funerals. And yeah, that was my first. Then I was member as a clarinetist.
Mm. And then when did the first ideas or suggestions come that, you know, maybe you can do this quite well, maybe that's something you could study, do professionally?
I felt very comfortable with playing. I recognized when we had rehearsals with the brass band that there were some colleagues who were very okay if they could hide behind some brass players and not playing. And in my case, I recognized it was the opposite. It was the other way around. I was always happy if there were some parts where people can hear me.
Yeah, yeah.
So I recognized for myself that I am loving to be present in a way.
Yeah.
And then, I after a few years with the conductor of the brass band, I changed to the music school in the next bigger city called Hallein. I was in the music school there. Again, big present to get a teacher like the first one was. Again, a teacher who was a very great human being and a very great musician, open-minded.
Fantastic.
With a klezmer specialist and also classical studies and Mozarteum. So very open-minded, very lots of impressions. And he was the one telling my parents, first of all, that he could imagine to go to Mozarteum, which is the music university of the city of Salzburg. And I think my parents felt a little bit proud in a way, because they were no professional musicians and that there is suggesting someone to bring their son to a musical university in the age of 12 or 13 was for them a kind of, oh,
yeah, of course.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, that's awesome, yeah.
And I was not very interested in, I remember. I didn't understand, but I did not know what is it. I thought everything is okay. I'm playing the brass band. I'm playing the music school with some young people, quartet things. Yeah. It's nice. What
more what do you
to
need?
Change? Yeah. Why? And they said, oh, you should try. You should try. You should try. And I tried.
Yeah.
Yes, I tried. But there was a little problem. I tried the audition for a, how do you call it,
pre-college
program. Program, something like this. And I managed the audition, but there are two clarinet systems in the room.
Now some education that people get for free as well. Yeah,
yeah. Which I did not know really at this time. But yeah. In Austria, in Germany, in German-speaking Switzerland, we play the so-called German system.
Yeah.
And all over the world, the rest of the world, plays a so-called French system or Böhm system.
Böhm system, yeah.
And I played, which is very crazy, as an Austrian, I started to play the clarinet with the Böhm system because my father played the Böhm system and lots of the folk musicians played the Böhm system. That was the reason why there is a little island in Salzburg where I was born, where people played this Böhm system, which is
just in this area.
Just in this area. And then I made the audition in the Mozarteum and they told me, yeah, the professor said, yeah, I you can study with me, but you have to change the system because I am teaching for people who are getting orchestral chops.
Yes, yes, yes.
And if you want to get an orchestral chop, you have to play German system.
How big is the difference for those? I mean, you know, I play a lot with clarinetists, especially Vera. But for those who might not know, like, what is the difference and how big is it to change that?
The obviously difference is that there's a small different fingering.
Yeah.
But which
mechanic
is
differently set up.
You can see it. If you see those two clarinets, you will see it suddenly. You don't have to be a clarinet player. You will see the difference.
Yeah.
But this is not the hardest thing in my point of view to change the system. The hardest thing for me, I was it was great to be very young.
Yeah.
I changed when I was 12 or 13. It's very easy to change when you're young.
Yeah, yeah.
You learn new things. But the hard thing for me was that the feeling of blowing the air into the instrument is completely different because the bore is different, because the mouthpieces are different, the reeds are different. Mm. And it was very hard for me at the beginning.
It needs much more.
It felt like more power, more...
Yeah.
And this was, in my memories, it was hard.
Especially the Austrian sound, even more than the German sound.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably. Yes.
As far as much as I have been told. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you are right. So that was the harder thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as a child with 12, it's absolutely okay.
Yeah.
For me, it was no big deal.
And now, how lucky you are that you did that.
Yes.
We will come to that later, but your orchestra career is a very, very, very impressive one.
Yes, and it was the right decision.
Yeah. So you changed it then when you started studying.
And then I studied there, but it was not the right teacher at the right time.
Mm.
It's a great teacher. It's no problem because we are very close friends till now. It was Alois Brandhofer. But he was not the perfect teacher at this time for a child with 12 years. I was a child.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Alois wanted to tell me about music. He wanted to. He's a very passionate musician, one of my big role models, really. There are some recordings of him till today. For me, they are the highest level you can reach. So... as I told you, we are very close. That's why I know it's okay to speak about him personally.
Yeah, yeah.
He was not at this time the perfect teacher for a 12-year-old child, and I didn't feel good because I need some, let's say, someone who I was struggling with the fingering because of the changing of the system and everything. Yeah. And he wanted to talk about music, of course. Mm,
yeah.
And I was not far enough. I was not good enough.
Didn't have the tools yet.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was the reason why I, together with my parents, decided to go to go back to music school, staying on the German system, changing back to the BOEM system, to improve the tools again. Yeah. And later on, I did some master classes with Alois Brandhofer, which were so great. And we really could work on musical things. And it wonderful, wonderful lessons. And we meet every summer during the Salzburg Festival at his house. And we have a nice relationship.
Nice. It's fantastic.
And then I went back to the music school to improve the skills.
Yeah.
And some years later, I was brought to Vienna to my, let's say, most important teacher, Hans Hindler, at the university, music university in Vienna, where I could really start to get very deep into his way of thinking, how we should, how naturally we should play with wind instruments, and this
with all instruments, in my opinion,
with all instruments. Yeah. Yes, there is a nice picture. I love to share it with you, because you said, which is very nice. You said with all instruments. What happens if you ask? I sometimes ask this my students. What happens if we don't have air? And they tell me, there's coming no music. I say, yes, right. But what happens if we have no air in general?
Yeah, we die.
We die. And I love this picture, how important air is, not only for us as a wind player, for every human being.
Yeah.
For me, air is the connection, for me personally, the connection between death and life, in a way. If we stop to breathe, we die. And something is brought to earth. Air is the moment where this, what stays, the energy, what stays. I don't care about which religion you believe in. But most of people think that something stays, when we die, some kind of energy stays. And the air is the connection where this, what is dying, the body, the outside things is dying, but the energy stays. And the air is this most important connection between being alive and being dead.
Yeah.
And as a wind player, especially as a wind player, we have to really think about this and take care about the air. Only through our air we can make those black dots on white paper being alive.
Yeah.
That's really what I believe in. And I recognize for myself that if I need a solution for a problem, I have a staccato problem. What was the first thing I was thinking about? What is happening with my tongue?
Yeah.
When I have a problem with a fingering problem, what is happening with my finger? And there, at a certain point, I recognized I can solve every problem with concentrating on the air.
Yeah.
I'm always finding solutions if I take care about my air. My teacher, sorry for interrupting, I'm very passionate about this idea. My teacher told us, try to give every note his own air cycle in a way. And I would find a different word for it. I would say, if you love every note, and it shouldn't sound esoteric in a way. Yeah, I really mean, if you love and if you bring this air to every note, you will hear it, you will feel it.
Yes.
You will get the connection to the people. And that's so important. And Hans Hindler, this teacher and later colleague at Vienna Phil, found a way to show me that he never used these words I'm using now. These are my words. I try to explain.
Yeah.
What is not easy to explain. He managed to give me a feeling for this. What air is for us as a clarinet player, but especially as a human being.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, it's a picture I always like, because on the bass, of course, we don't use the air, but it's a lot, a thing on string instruments, a lot about movement and how movement overall feels, and people get so cramped, and in the end we make sound through movement. Like if we don't move,
and
nothing comes.
You know what Hans said always to us? Think about the bowings of string instruments. This is our air.
It's perfect comparison.
I think this is what you mean. Yeah.
And to me, that's like I look at it like a soup. You know, the soup has the ingredients, like some vegetables, yeah, meat, whatever, and they can be great. But if the broth is not good, it will never taste good. On the other hand, if some of the ingredients are not even that great, but the broth is fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, now I gave a masterclass, and there was one participant, I will not say any details about them, but insane talent. I've almost never seen something like that. And he didn't really know so much about playing the bass, like technique, you know, making
nice.
Good fingers. Yeah. Like making good fingerings, yeah, or how shifts work. You know, so many things, so many of the ingredients were not there,
mm-hmm,
but the broth was insane.
A nice picture. I like
so
the picture
ridiculous.
Of this soup. Yeah.
It's not mine. I stole it from a person that I've worked with a lot. I steal many things. I will steal your ideas also.
I also steal lots of things, but I'm not ashamed about, because as we agree, we try to learn.
Yes.
If I hear some great story by a conductor, by a teacher, by a colleague, I share it. I take it.
Yeah.
I want to hear everything and sort it, try it by myself and decide by myself. Oh yes, true. Or I try and I don't feel it like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then maybe you add it to your in your own way and make it part of what you are.
Yeah,
or maybe
perhaps
not.
You modificate it in a little way or
yes,
something like this. But it's no bad thing. I always told Hans Hindler, when I'm teaching, I always told him, I just do what you told me with my words, with my ideas, but I tell my students what you told me.
Yeah.
So and this is okay. For him, it's okay. For me, it's okay. I think probably his ideas he also brought from different sides. And
definitely.
Like everybody.
I think nobody's smart enough to create
anything
all by themselves.
Yes.
Like everything
yes,
is partially. I mean, that's what tradition also is. I think it's just
absolutely
accumulation of a lot of stuff that
absolutely
yeah, and that we then
you only need people who want to get something.
Yes,
this is the only thing we need. Really, people also in our society, in our community, then we will really be good to each other.
Yes,
if we have people who only are blocking everything, it will not work. It has to go through. And then you can decide, I like, I don't like. It's absolutely okay.
But you need to be open to
it. You need to be open.
Yeah, I see that so often, especially in some places, not in all, but in some. That's what I see in cities or orchestras or institutions sometimes that have a lot of tradition, that they get so obsessed with the tradition that they will not add anything new anymore. And then
that's
it starts
pity.
To die.
That's
then it starts to die.
Then we will live in a museum in a way.
Absolutely.
At some point.
You know, I love this quote. Many people said it. Mahler was one of them, though, who said tradition is to keep the fire burning,
yes,
not to glorify the ashes. Yeah.
I like this very much, too.
It's perfect. Because, I mean, we often think now Mahler is that's traditional music, like that's standard repertoire. Back then it was also crazy new and revolutionary and unique,
yeah,
and holy
yeah,
cow, you know, that was something.
Yeah.
That was not at all tradition at that point, but it became
yes,
tradition. Yeah, and for you, so you started studying in Vienna, and then did you have the goal to, at that point, say, I want to be in an orchestra?
It developed. I've never had the goal to become member of Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra. Never. Because it was too far away. I never could imagine about this. But at a certain point, I felt, oh, it would be the greatest thing to be part of an orchestra. I don't care which one, but yeah. I want to be part of an orchestra someday, and let's try to manage it.
Yeah.
That was, this goal developed, yes.
And then what was your first?
My first professional job was in ORF, Radio Symphony Orchestra.
The Austrian Radio Symphony, yes. Yeah.
Yes. Which was a great time. I was very young, at the age of 20. Wow. And I had a very great colleague on the principal clarinet. I was second.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a great job, and he was playing very beautiful. And I always listened when he had some solo passages, and as a young, I tried to do my best to help him and follow him. But I always thought, oh, I want to play these nice passages. Not because he didn't a good job. He did a great job playing beautifully. But I wanted to play the same things.
Yeah.
And then at this time, with internet, it was not like it's today. There was this famous magazine where orchestral jobs were announced, and I was just looking in this magazine, and
where is
a principal one? Yeah. I didn't care about the orchestra really.
Yeah.
And then I saw there is a principal in Berlin, a so-called Deutsche Symphonieorchester Berlin, German Symphony Orchestra Berlin.
Yeah, yeah.
And I applied for the audition, and I got an invitation at the age of 22, which is very brave. Now when I have connection with some former colleagues from there, and we sometimes talk about that, I tell them, wow, you've been very brave to hire a 22-year young guy who has no experience on the principal clarinet.
But you must have played well in the audition, I guess.
I think the audition was good, but it's a different discipline to do a good audition and then to play these parts in the orchestra on this position.
Yeah, it's the same with bass, you know. A friend of mine won the first principal bass in Gewandhaus Orchestra with 19.
Yeah.
And then he went, he told me this, I think it's okay if I share it. He went after the audition to the group and was like, are you sure you want this? Mm-hmm. And they said, yeah. And they saw it, and then, you know, now he passed his trial years, 2 years of trial. And I recently saw him play in the orchestra, the Detelgenleben, by Strauss with Gatti as a conductor. Insane. And him leading the bass section, and wow.
Great.
It was, and he now told me also, he cannot understand why they did that.
Mm.
It's insane. It's totally crazy. He would never, like, such a risky move. But absolutely, when I saw how he was leading the bass section, I was like, oh, great choice. Great, great choice. Because he developed so fantastically into it. But like in your case, it must have been, it was a
very risky,
a daring
thing. But
they
told me, when I asked them years later, they told me, yes, but if we thought if you do not manage it because you're too young or you have no experience, you would not pass the trial, and that's it. So they are quite, of course, for me, it would be nightmare if I didn't pass the but they saw it quite cool,
nice
from their point of view, and I'm very thankful that they gave me the opportunity, and I took it. I was so happy. I took it. I wanted to play everything. The big thing was that of course, like in almost all bigger orchestras, there are two principals.
In Europe, in the US, actually. I don't know how it's in the winds, but in the strings, there is, like, if we have, like in Vienna, Phil, even three principals.
Mm-hmm.
In most German, it's two principal basses. In the US, it's always one.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
And even also only one concertmeister.
Okay.
So we have, I don't know how it's with the winds, but yeah, in Europe, it's always at least two. Yeah,
And the big thing was that the second principal, my colleague, was moving. I started to play there, and after 3 months, he moved to the principal position of Bavarian Radio Symphony. And that was so great for me, because I was not, I shouldn't play 100%.
Yeah.
I shouldn't play 50%.
Yeah, yeah.
But I played 100%, because for them it was great, because
I don't have to hire anyone.
It was a cheap solution. But I didn't think about this. I just wanted to play everything.
Wow.
And it was a so good, let's say, education for me to learn all this repertoire. I was 2.5 years in Berlin in this orchestra.
Yeah, and that orchestra, just since most people know, they play the symphony concerts always in the Berliner Philharmonie.
Yes, which
is one of the best halls ever. Yeah.
And it was my orchestral university, being there in this orchestra and playing everything.
Wow.
Every week. And
that's crazy. That must have been insane to learn all that repertoire.
Yes, but I loved it. I bought all the partituras, and I really had time at this time. I had lots of time and lots of energy and lots of thing to prepare every. And I think now, 20 years later, I really live from this time in a way.
I
learned so much, and I had the time and the energy and the space to really learn this symphonic repertoire. Repertoire was a later thing, but the symphonic repertoire this time I learned very, very much, and it was so great. And like in Germany, it is a kind of, it works like this. If you are doing, I try to explain, I hope I explain it in the right way, but if you do a good job as a principal wind player in a good German orchestra, different other orchestras who need players for certain projects, because there is a free position or because there is someone sick or anything, they ask you to come to join for 1 week their orchestra.
Yeah.
And that for me, it was suddenly, I was 23 years old and playing in the most important German orchestras, including Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra, which I never, I remember the moment where I went to the Philharmonie, which I knew, because as you told our listeners, that also Deutsche Symphony Orchestra Berlin did the concerts in the Philharmonie. But I will never forget the moment where I went to the rehearsal in the Philharmonie, and there was this music, how do you call it? This Mappe.
Music, the map.
The map, where it was printed Berliner Philharmonisches Orchester, Erste Klarinette. And I thought, okay, that's now for 1 week, the place it was Albrecht Meyer, Emmanuel Pahü. I was 23. I was really, 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 very, very excited.
Yeah.
And I was able to play in, I was asked to play in Dresden, in Hamburg, in Berlin, in Munich. I really had the opportunity to play in all those orchestras. And
it's incredible.
I'm so thankful. Also, as a Vienna-based and in Vienna educated clarinet player, that I had the opportunity before coming back to Vienna to see the rest of the world.
Yes, I think that is very healthy.
I have really to say that I feel it like a present for me compared to some colleagues who had not the opportunity to do this.
I think I see that so often. Vienna is one of these cities because very it's
dangerous.
So rich. Yeah,
very dangerous.
And I see so many students also that they only see Vienna and they don't see the rest of the world. And not that Vienna is
don't
great.
Get me wrong, Vienna is great. Vienna is, let's say, perhaps one of the musical capitals. But for me, it was a present to have these 3 years going around to Hamburg, to Munich, to Berlin, to Dresden, to all the cities, to all these orchestras, to see, oh, wow, they are really good. Not only Vienna, not only Austria. And that's really, for me, a very, very important experience.
Yeah, that's what I also try to show in my teaching. Not even just Europe. You know, I also played for quite some time principal bass projects in London Symphony. Completely different style, completely different world, but also fantastic. And I never played in one of the American orchestras. It's a bit far away logistically to go in to play gigs there.
For the clarinet player, it's difficult because of this system.
Yes.
But I have to tell you, one of my dreams came true half year ago.
Yeah?
Yeah. Chicago Symphony was in Vienna and on the farewell tour of Riccardo Muti.
Yes. I know, actually, yeah.
And I was in Salzburg for Mozartwoche and there was a day off.
Yeah.
With my orchestra in Salzburg. And there was a day off and I was on this, 2 days off, and I was on the ski hike. And they called me and said, can you come to Vienna? The principal of Chicago Symphony has corona and is not allowed to play. And we need you for tonight's concert.
Wow.
And Maestro Muti asked to ask me, which was a big honor.
Yeah.
And so I really managed what I've never thought about, to play once with one of the big American orchestras as a German clarinet player.
Yeah.
And it was in my home stadium in Wiener Musikverein, with Riccardo Muti, with this orchestra. So it, a dream came true to have also now this experience from a big American orchestra. And it was
awesome.
Wonderful. I'm very thankful for this opportunity. And it was a big thing for me.
Wow, that is so fantastic. Yeah, you know, for me, that's something I will probably never do at this point. But actually, although in a way, once I had a gig in Chicago, and the principal bass, Alex Hanna, the principal bass of Chicago Symphony, he really helped me out. I was playing with Anne-Sophie Mutter, and we did a tour, US tour, and I didn't want to travel with my bass because I did like Vivaldi Seasons and I did bass functions. So I was like, I don't want to have to bother with the flights all the time, every night different city, always with my own bass. That would have been so crazy. So I took basses at the venues, and in Chicago we played in Chicago Symphony Hall, and they gave me some jazz bass, which sounded like, for pizzicato, great, but with the bow, absolutely horrible. And then I was like, oh god, what am I gonna do now, you know? And so I on Facebook, once the professor of Chicago wrote to me if I want to do a masterclass, and I did a Facebook call to him, and he was not in town, unfortunately. And then he gave me the phone number of the principal bass of Chicago Symphony, of Alex Hanna, and I called him with my Austrian phone number. Yeah, so he got a call from some Austrian phone number, and he picked up actually, and then he drove in. He just took his bass out of the hall the morning of that day. He drove back in, gave me his bass, the bass he always plays with in the orchestra. And then like half an hour before the concert, I got his bass. So that's my connection to Chicago Symphony. I didn't play in them, but at least I played on an instrument that played in them.
Yes. But it's nice that he trusted you with his bass.
It's insane. It's so nice. Like I bought a bottle of wine for him later, and I still owe him. Like if I ever go back to Chicago, I need to, I don't know, figure something out. But that was so nice. Even that he picked up with some, if I get a call with some number from some other country that I probably don't recognize, I do not pick up, right? Yes. So that was absolutely insane. For you, so 2.5 years in Berlin, and then you continued with auditions.
Yes, and then I loved Berlin, and I loved, as I explained, this amount of learning this symphonic repertoire. But born in Salzburg, I recognized that for my life I wished to come a little bit more to the south again. it would have been absolutely okay to stay in Berlin. It's not that I felt like, oh, I have to go there. I don't feel good. No, I felt wonderful. But I recognized that there was a principal position in Munich Philharmonic Orchestra. And I know, okay, Munich is, let's say, 2 hours from my home village. And I had the idea of coming home more closer to Austria. At this time, Christian Thielemann was chief conductor of Munich Philharmonic. Nice. I didn't know him, of course, but I heard lots of him, about him, and it was interesting for me to apply for this position.
Of course.
And
of course,
I've played there several times as a substitute, and then I decided to apply for the position. And it worked, in a way, and it was crazy because I felt now, wow, this is the position I want to stay.
Yeah.
In a way, it really felt like this. I thought about building a house in my home village and only having a small apartment in Munich for the. I had some ideas, and the music and the great conductors in Munich.
It's a fantastic city. Yeah, I mean a lot of orchestras, but three of the top in the world: the State Opera, the Bavarian Symphony, Munich Phil. Like, and then also, of course, there are the Theater am Gärtnerplatz, Münchner Symphoniker.
Absolutely,
like,
and also the nature, the environment.
Yes,
So it felt really great. And the audition, we really managed to look for the season, what should I play, what my colleague play. We did everything you have to do. And after a few weeks, my teacher from Vienna called me by phone and said, Matthias, we didn't expect, but one of our colleagues is retiring a little earlier than expected, and there is a audition in our orchestra, and I would really appreciate if you would apply for this. Because, you know, you are my teacher and, you know, you have studied in Vienna. And it would be great if you would apply for our orchestra too. And I did not know, should I laugh or should I cry? Because I really was a little bit insecure. I felt so great in Munich.
I know that feeling. I'll tell you when the cameras are off. I'll tell you why, but I know the feeling very well.
On the one hand, I was in Munich. I was in this great orchestra. I really felt we had a great relationship with the colleagues in Munich and the conductors and the music, the hall, everything felt really perfect. And then I know in my home country, in the city where I have studied, in the orchestra, which is in a way so unique and so special, there is a position. What should I do? I was really not secure.
Yeah.
I was on the one day like this, on the one day. And then on a certain point, I decided, no, I have to try.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just for me. Even if it does not work, everything will be perfect because I feel so good in Munich. So I had a feeling of nothing to lose.
Yeah.
Nothing to lose. Let's just try. And this was very helpful, of course.
Yes, of course. For
an audition
in
this orchestra. Also with my history at this point, when you win lots of auditions in the row, of course, if you go to the audition, some of the people might say that you should win also the next one. But for me, it was clear, no, there are different great players too. I'm not the only one. But of course, I had a kind of pressure.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But to know that I have this position in Munich make me feel quite comfortable. I decided to try it with everything I have, like I did before.
Yeah.
I will prepare as good I can. I will do everything. The audition was on the 27th of December.
That they would get the orchestra members then. Oh, well, no, Vienna Philharmonic works all the time anyway. So.
It was really crazy because I remember I played Under the Christmas Tree where my first clarinet was placed on the same place. which is nice. I recognize now this circle.
Yeah.
But I played on the 24th of December, 3 days before the audition. I played the Mozart exposition for my parents just to practice. And yeah.
Just imagine I will play Dieterstorff concerto on the lectures. A big present for my parents.
Oh my
yeah.
God. Thanks, Mozart, for this concerto. No. And yeah, I felt quite good, I think, because of this position, because I know I had the position in Munich.
Yeah. There's no pressure. Like, even if it doesn't work, you are set. You have a dream job.
Yeah. And then it worked too. Yeah. It was a kind of flow, I think.
Yeah.
As a lot of us know, sometimes you can get a very good feeling of flowing. It also can, if it's dangerous, you can also come in a
downward spiral. Also.
Yeah.
But it is just an insane achievement, I have to say. You win, first of all, so young, Deutsche Symphonieorchester Berlin, principal clarinet. And then you win Münchner Philharmoniker, principal clarinet. And then right after,
it was just insane.
Yeah, but that is really, really damn impressive. Most people don't win an audition in any one of those ever, you know, not even talking about principal. And then it's very, very, very incredible.
It was a great time, yeah. It felt quite light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then what did, but then you already had, did you already sign a contract in Munich? Did you already have to play there? Or?
This was interesting because it was common in German orchestras, if you change from one German orchestra to the other German orchestra, that they give you the chance to do Aushilfe substitution as long as they say, okay, now we can decide about your trial. So you can use the substitution projects for your trial.
Perfect.
Making possible that you don't have to cancel your job at the former orchestra.
Yeah, but just for those who don't know, like, there's this trial year process, and if you don't go through the trial
year, you can go back to your old orchestra.
In that case, yeah, just imagine if you couldn't. You give up your job, go through a trial, then you lose it, and then you have lost both. That would be insane.
And it was very nice to have this. So that's the reason why, to answer your question, why I didn't sign a contract in Munich.
I just
played these projects we fixed for me as a trial.
Trial period, yeah.
Period, you know.
So
but
you played...
Without the contract.
But you continued playing Berlin at the same.
Yes, I've played Berlin and Munich at the same time, which was okay for a certain time.
Okay, yeah, but it must have been quite a bit of work.
Yeah.
And then right after that, you went to Vienna.
Yes.
And then could you also still continue in one of those to say...
It was not possible, no.
So you took a risk also.
Yes.
But it worked out. How long are you now in Vienna, Phil?
17 years.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So it did clearly work out. You know, now we have talked about the whole orchestra career aspect, which, yeah, I think it's just insane to go like that. What to me, since we're already at an hour, and I know you have a concert later, so I don't want to keep you too long, but one thing that I want to talk about. I mean, I wanted to talk about many other things, but today, unfortunately, I don't think we will have the time. But what is, for me, so impressive is, you know, Vienna Philharmonic is a place with a lot of work. You have a lot of shifts in the orchestra, a lot of Dienst, because you do opera and Philharmonic and tours and so on and so forth. But you do so many other cool, interesting projects on the side. Also often new things. And one of the, I think, coolest things any musician I know has ever done is what you did. You bought a train station.
Yes.
You bought a train station and made it into a place for culture and for art. It's a Kulturbahnhof and also culture train station. And how in the hell did you get the idea to buy a train station and do that?
The nice thing, you told our listeners before that we are crazy, which is great. I love crazy people, and I know that I'm crazy too, which is not always healthy and which is not always easy to be together with crazy people and just passionate. But I am what I am.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I have to find a way to accept that it is like it is. And I've always dreamed about my own theater.
Having your own theater?
Yes.
Wow.
And of course, this train station, it was built in 1877. So it's a quite old building with lots of history.
Yeah.
And for me, this train station is my theater. Of course, it is no theater, but I made it in a way a kind of playground for a boy, for Matthias, who does not want to be an adult. Who only wants to stay a child and playing on a playground with the clarinet, playing, not working, playing. Yeah. And to make those concerts possible, to create nice light for the stage, to have some sound equipment which is comfortable for the artists, for the audience, to make the backstage area, it's a little room, but
yeah.
This little room with some nuts and water and some fruits, like I would be happy when I am arriving as an artist at a certain place and I feel, oh, this small cup of nuts somebody put there with love.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah.
I much more appreciate this than I'm happy with getting good money for playing my concerts.
Yeah.
But I appreciate more, really more, to have the feeling that I'm welcome. Yeah. And there is a kind of atmosphere which is warm and which is honest and which is for the thing we do and not for the prestige and not for the TV and not for the just for us, just for direct connection between human beings.
It's something that you do because you love it. Like when we started talking about, because that's, for me, it's the same thing. Like when I do projects, there are certain projects I do because, it's important projects or it's paid well. And then there are these projects.
It's okay if someone is paid well. It's okay.
And then sometimes there are these projects that I do because I just absolutely love doing them.
Genau.
It's like for me, it's my bass quartet concerts. When I play with bass quartet, that's, although actually we are getting quite big crowds by now in Germany with the bass quartets. It's insane. I would have never thought so, but it's really working. We even played like an Elbphilharmonie in the Chamber Music Hall with bass quartet the whole evening.
It develops like this because you didn't plan.
Yes, not at all.
Yeah.
And that's one of my playgrounds. This is one of my playgrounds. This podcast. It's also something I'm doing. I'm risking not being great at it. I know I did some episodes. I was like, damn, if I had more experience, I could have somehow pulled some strings to make it even better.
I walked in this door, even if we know each other for lots of years, but I walked in this door. We said hello with a hug. The first question, would you like to have a coffee? I go into this room here, which is really very nice, decorated, which feels very good.
That's because of Amelie and Felix.
the equipment is like great equipment. You have different camera positions. You have great Austrian AKM microphones. And so what I want to say is that it don't matter what you do, but the most important thing is to do it with love. This is a big word. I'm sorry, but I don't know a different one.
Absolutely. That's what makes life worth
it. This Hingabe, this passion, this love. You need it for everything you do. It's not always easy.
Yeah.
And I do not manage to do everything with love every day, 365 days a year. No.
Absolutely.
I'm no yogi. But I see the moments where I manage it, and then I'm it should be like this. And if you have to put the cup in the machine which is washing the dishes, you have two possibilities. You can be very angry The machine will do the same.
Yeah.
It will wash the things.
Yeah.
You will, after 1 hour, put it, and it will be this. The machine will do it the same. You can decide if you put the cups with a smile.
Yeah.
And you can decide. You know, it just helps you to feel better.
I mean, and I really feel that at the Kulturbahnhof. I've been there many times. Actually, my mom and my sister will go there soon for
really
concert
with Georg.
Georg, yeah. Yes, of course. I wish I could be there. I'm not in Austria, unfortunately. Yeah. But you know, it's not that you just have now the train station, but you got train wagons brought from other parts of Austria. You got a former train restaurant wagon, which is now a restaurant there. You know, it's not just I do this, but you really do it. And you created something so insane.
Yeah,
there.
I try to fill it with life, but it is not possible to do it alone.
Yeah.
Because you need audience. You need people who want to see you. Who you need curious people who fill this place. Yeah?
Yeah.
You can never do it for your own. No, it doesn't work. You need people. You need artists like you. You played there and you didn't get that much money you get in different venues. But you felt in love, like Thomas Gansch, who played several times there.
Yeah.
You, all of you, you play in big venues and you get, of course, good paid money for your concerts, which is absolutely great. But you come there for a different reason.
Yeah.
Because there's something out of the box and you like it.
Absolutely.
And it does not have... I don't want to say that if you're playing in a great venue, you have the same experience like me. There can be big venues, famous venues, where you feel also very treated with love.
Yes.
It's not that easy, that the big famous ones are shitty and just like this, and the small out-of-the-box ones are very... There can also be very small venues where you have the feeling... Is there anybody responsible for
yes,
me?
Yes, absolutely.
It's not about the size. It's about the people who take care about it.
Exactly. I mean, that's the same as with this podcast. You know, I can have guests like you who I could talk to you for so many hours and I would love every second. I have a great, great, great team that I can work with, because honestly, without them, this would not be possible at all.
Yeah.
So it's always about the people around it, and that's what makes something fantastic, and with heart and with joy, and then we can also play with heart and with joy and be amateurs again, so to say, in the best way of the word.
When you talk to me here in this we know each other, but in also in this circumstances, and I have the feeling at this moment when you ask me a question, you give me the feeling I'm now the most important person in your life for this moment where you are asking me this question. And if we manage to communicate like this whenever possible, we can make the world better.
Yeah, on camera and off camera. Doesn't
absolutely
matter. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's what I'm talking about. And with our mouth and our words, but also with our music.
Yeah.
If we can play just to give the feeling that it's just for you. It's just for you.
Yes.
It's just for you. Yeah. They will feel it. I think they will feel it.
You know where I felt that more than I have felt it ever before on a stage?
Yeah.
Is when we did this in Hamburg, this Inside Brahms project.
Mm-hmm.
Which we've together with the Fanny Mendelssohn Förderpreis and Schleswig-Holstein Festival, where we played in a lot of concerts in these small stages, and you made the whole concept and you moderated on stage. You also played, but in some concerts you didn't even play. You just introduced the program and you had a concept and an idea and a story behind everything. And I felt, even when you were not playing the clarinet, you were just there talking, that at this moment it was just we were there to create a great experience, all of us together.
Mm.
And that has, this week we spent there with these concerts, that has inspired me so much.
Thank
and
you.
This
me
has
too.
Changed my concerts and how I do my concerts now forever.
Wow, yeah, thank you. But it inspired me too. And that's how we learn and learn and learn from each other. Learning is no thing from one side to the other. It always gets different directions. Also with teaching, of course, probably you have the same experience. But
100%.
If I teach, I'm learning so much from the people I teach, from the students.
I think I've never made as much progress in my playing as I have in the last year that I've been like teaching so regularly. Yes. Never made so much progress because, if you're not willingly blind, you will automatically
absolutely
do this. Take so much away.
If you're open.
Yeah.
If you are happy to hear something new and I have to try.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I'm not able to, like you told me before. There, I know this. I had also students where I think, I will never do it like this.
Oh, yeah. I have a few now. I have one especially that I know actually now I will have a few and I already have a few where I'm like, boy. I wish I could play these things.
Isn't this great?
It's the best. I want every one of my students to play a million times better than me.
Yes.
That's my goal, that I can just be there and try to help them and they make the world a better place.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, at this point, I would have wanted to talk to you about so many other things. And I hope maybe we can do another episode at some point and we can continue, hopefully, because this was, to me, such a huge joy. And thank you again so much for doing this and taking the time.